So the actual Avenatti complaint, if you're familiar with it, his client was a coach in an NCAA basketball program based in California. The AAU program was coached by this client, and he had a $72,000 a year contract with Nike that Nike decided not to propose. The client apparently had some information that implicated Nike in funneling payments to amateur athletes in violation of the NCAA rules. And so Avenatti, seizing on that opportunity, goes and sets up a meeting with Nike. He says, "I can't put it in writing. I have to be there in person," which should have been your first clue that he knew that he was doing something wrong. And then he says, "I want you to pay $1.5 million to this coach." How he gets that number, I don't know. "And oh, by the way, I want you to hire me to conduct an internal investigation." And the number, sort of as you read the complaint, sort of goes from $10 million to $25 million minimum payment. And even if you hire some other firm to conduct your internal investigation to see if this wrongdoing is really going on, you still have to pay me. And that's basically the facts. He wanted to be paid $10 million or more in return for not holding a press conference. And, of course, an extortion is not complete with a lot of cussing, and so there was some of that. Those are direct quotes from the complaint, which it's pretty good reading. And it's still going on. It's not been resolved, so all of these are just allegations. And if Mr. Avenatti's listening, please don't sue me. And so I thought it was fascinating, so I went and looked up the Hobbs Act, because you always, you know, in your career, and I'm not a sharp dealer, but every once in a while you come across these situations where people are really putting the screws to your client, and you're like, this just seems so unfair, and it was fascinating to me to try to figure out where it crosses the line. So, the Avenatti complaint uses two statutes. The first one is the Hobbs Act. It's 18 U.S.C. 1951, and it includes fear of physical violence and fear of economic harm are the things that are covered by that. And it also uses the term wrongful, and that's always hard. We have the same thing in 152. It's like knowingly and fraudulently is what we have in 152. These statutes use the term wrongful, but how do you know it's wrong? How do you know whether or not this quid pro quo is actually criminal? So the second statute is 18 U.S.C. 875, and this one also requires interstate or foreign commerce, and it also includes a threat to injure the property or reputation. So reputational damage or reputational threats are more clearly covered by 875 rather than the Hobbs Act. So what are the differences and what are the similarities between the two? Both require a transmission over interstate commerce, and that's just because it's a federal statute, so you have to have that element. 875 includes reputational harm. But other courts have said that even the Hobbs Act can cover reputational harm because reputation is a form of property. That was a Ninth Circuit opinion with a very strong dissent. So it was a 2-1 decision. So I don't know that you can really bank on that, but there is a case out there that says that. 875 also contains no wrongful requirement, but courts have implied wrongful. Because it's one of those statutes that's so broadly worded, it could literally apply to our everyday conversations with our opposing counsel. So the analysis of these two statutes has become largely homogenized, and that is that both statutes tend to be brought in the same cases, and they tend to be construed as being one and the same, with, you know, very slight differences. Both statutes are interpreted to be, in order to be wrongful, the thing sought must be something to which the party doesn't have a right to. So no claim of right. So we can imagine in Mr. Avenatti's case that he doesn't have the right to be hired by Nike to conduct an internal investigation. That is a choice that Nike has, and he has no right. So that element seems to be, present in spades. Cases allow for hard dealing. There's an interesting case called Rennell v. Roe. It's basically a joint venture where one of the joint venture partners pulled out and said, you know, I know your interest in the joint venture is probably a couple million. I'm going to pay you a couple hundred thousand, and I want you to sign this release. The non-breaching party signed the release, had buyer's remorse, and said, wait, I think this was like extortion because you said you were going to withdraw from the joint venture, and then you were going to publicize it, and it was going to ruin my business, so I signed the release, and it wasn't right. Brought a civil RICO claim based on the Hobbs Act, and the court said, look, this was just sharp dealing. You of course, you felt like you had to sign that, but the breaching joint venture partner had the right to withdraw from the joint venture for no reason. And in that circumstance, he had a right to do what he did. You don't like the way he did it. If he breached the contract, you should just bring a breach of contract claim. But they wouldn't recognize it in that case.